The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
Brought to you by Standard Life. Retirement specialists getting you ready for your second life.
Israel saying that it has completed the first phase of withdrawal from Gaza. The Irish Times, stunning picture on the front of the Irish Times, says Gaza on the move, displaced trek home. Palestinians walk along the Al-Rashid Road towards Gaza City in the central Gaza Strip yesterday as Israeli forces declare a ceasefire and withdrew from some positions. Alan Shatter is with us. He's board member of the Israel Council on Foreign Relations, of course, former Minister for Justice as well. And Dr. Ofer Kassif, who is member of the Knesset representing Hadash, the Democratic Front for Peace and Equality. And we were speaking earlier on to Paul Cairns from Tel Aviv, and he was talking about the impact that this has had on Israel and Israeli reputation around the world. We will get to that. Before that, though, that the likelihood of this peace being permanent. Dr. Kassif, let me begin with you. Your level of optimism about the capacity for this peace to hold into the long term, how great is it?
I would like to quote Antonio Gramsci, the Marxist philosopher and leader, who said that it's better to stick to pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will. And less poetically, that means that we must be prepared for the worst and struggle for the best. I surely hope that the agreement, without any reference to my view about it, but I would like to think and believe that the agreement will be respected in full and will be completed in full, including, of course, the commitment to a Palestinian state.
What is your expectation in relation to the process of rebuilding and in relation to solving the humanitarian crisis that exists?
After 2 years of genocide and atrocities and ethnic cleansing, war crimes, crimes against humanity, obviously the materials, that the resources that are needed and the time that is needed to reconstruct Gaza and to deliver whatever the people, the mostly refugees, are needed, that would take time, and that will take, as I said, many resources. Those should be supplied on the spot immediately, and I hope that they will pursue those very rapidly and without any hesitation or reservation. That's a must, a humanitarian must.
Alan Shatter, let me bring you in. At this point, while it is very positive that there is a peace process, it is also somewhat opaque as to what the new governance structure is going to look like within Gaza and what guarantees there are that this will be permanent. Have you any insight into what that is likely to be?
Well, firstly, let me say I'm cautiously optimistic that this will work. The 20-point Trump peace plan covers a whole range of very important issues. And of course, we're now just at implementation of the first phase, which, thank heavens, will finally result in the release of all the hostages, both living and dead. And the great tragedy for both Palestinians and Israelis is that, and I've said this on multiple times over the last 2 years, had the hostages been released a long time ago, this conflict would have ended a long time ago. And that was always within the discretion of Hamas, who chose as a death cult to continue this conflict. Now, what's interesting about this agreement is, let's assume the first phase is going to be implemented, which is primarily about the release of hostages, all of whom must be released no later than midday Monday next, which is a pivotal date in the Jewish calendar because it's what we call the eve of Simchat Torah, which is the annual celebration of the end of the reading of the five books of the Bible that in relation to the Jewish religion. And it was on the morning of Simchat Torah 2 years ago that these hostages were abducted 2 years ago. The next stage in this occurs. Yes.
What about a governance structure within Gaza? What about the humanitarian problems within Gaza?
Well, the humanitarian problems are directly dealt with in the first phase. There's an absolute commitment that as much aid as is necessary gets into Gaza, that it is facilitated and it isn't in any way disrupted. And that includes the Israelis ensuring that there's no difficulties on their side, and Hamas no longer stealing aid and disrupting the delivery of aid and acquiring some of it to sell for their financial benefit. But where we go to in the second phase is crucially important. In the context of this agreement, the 20-point part of it, the initial signing off is for phase one. I expect, as we were sitting here and as we go through the weekend into early next week, talks are taking place on the implementation of phase two. And those talks, I'm hoping, will not prove difficult because...
But surely there must be some major sticking points. I mean, there is the militarisation and armament of Hamas and whether or not they are willing to send it. They are already saying that they are unlikely to. There is who is going to be responsible for oversight and governing the area. There are Hamas already saying Tony Blair is unacceptable. Are they not going to be major challenges to overcome?
Well, there are contradictory noises and I've been following what's happening very closely in recent months and indeed have engaged with Gershon Baskin as one of the people who worked behind the scenes to bring about this agreement. And when I say there are contradictory noises, the 20-point peace plan is very clear. The 20-point peace plan envisages the decommissioning of weapons by Hamas, a civil, essentially Palestinian administration running Gaza for a period of time to be appointed what they call a technocratic administration. And what President Trump has referenced as a peace board, as an overall board that effectively would have oversight to ensure this is all happening.
Ultimately leading to a Palestinian state?
Well, what the agreement references, and this isn't going to happen with any great speed, but a primary point in the agreement right at the end of the agreement is saying that the United States will establish a dialogue between Israel and the Palestinians to agree on a political horizon for peaceful and prosperous coexistence, and paragraph 19 talks about a credible pathway to Palestinian self-determination and statehood. And what we need to remember in Ireland is, and I'm very aware of this, it was on the 31st of August 1994 that the IRA announced a ceasefire. Now, this isn't a ceasefire. This is an agreement to a permanent end to the war, which is a crucial difference. But it took us from the end of August 1994 until Easter of 1998 for the Good Friday Agreement to be put in place. So this process is going to take time. But in the intervening period, the crucial thing is that the initial stages are implemented, peace is maintained.
Okay, we have that point.
Reconstruction takes place
indeed.
In Gaza.
Let me bring in
and there's no further violence.
On that. Afer, do you believe that the possibility of a Palestinian state is now a real one?
It's always been a real one. But the problem is that mainly Israeli governments, in plural, not only this government, but governments throughout the years since the occupation of 1967, did whatever they could in order to prevent the establishment of a Palestinian state. Perhaps excluding the government of Rabin, who was murdered by a fascist Jewish terrorist because of that. But it is real, and I said it quite a long time ago, that we are closer, in my view, to the establishment of Palestinian state than perhaps we ever been. It's a terrible cost, you know. The ocean of blood has been horrific, especially on the Palestinian side. But let's not forget the Israeli side too. Thousands of people have been killed throughout the years mainly because of the occupation. And so it must end.
And Afer, can I ask you?
I believe that we are now much closer to that than before.
Okay, you talked about the oceans. You talked about an ocean of blood. You've used a terminology there that is unusual to hear coming from a member of the Knesset. You talked earlier on about genocide, about ethnic cleansing, about war crimes. What is your view of how the world now perceives Israel, and to what extent is that rehabilitatable?
First, it's too little and too late. I said that there was a genocide almost 2 years ago, just weeks after the attack on Gaza began. I must be very clear that my friends and comrades in Hadash and myself, of course, from the very first second that we realized what happened in the south of Israel, we condemned those war crimes and crimes against humanity that Hamas pursued too. But we said that nothing can justify this carnage carried out by Hamas, neither the Nakba nor the occupation, etc. By the same token, we said that nothing can justify the genocide and atrocities that Israel carried out, not even the carnage that Hamas committed on October 7th. So, from the very beginning, we opposed it. I personally opposed it, because that was a genocide. Those were atrocities. Those were war crimes that should have been prevented. Unfortunately, the international community did nothing. And now most of the states in the world, something like 150, voted at the UN for the two-state solution and therefore the recognition of a Palestinian state. So I said, it's much too little and much too late, but definitely it's better than nothing and never. So, and I think that the international community, first and foremost, must stay in tune to see that the agreement is not violated. Okay. And that, of course, also means that the development, that the evolution towards Palestinian liberation and the establishment of Palestinian state alongside the state of Israel, of course, not instead of it, must be realized.
Okay, Afra Kassif, I want to bring Alan Chatter back in on that. The phraseology that Afra Kassif is using there, Alan, I believe you would disagree with. You do not see this as having been a genocide. Is that correct?
I disagree entirely with what he said. Your listeners may not realize that Afra is a member of the Hadash party, as you mentioned. They get somewhere between 3.45 to 4% of the vote in Israel. He's an extreme Marxist communist who sees everything through an ideological perspective. And I don't want to really waste too much time this morning on historical narratives, but...
But the point that he makes about a genocide is one that is shared very much more widely than just within his party. It is a view that is held by a number of NGO organizations around the world and probably very well believed in Ireland. Yeah, you don't share it.
It's a Hamas propaganda line that the Iranians also.
No, come on.
I didn't interrupt you. You don't.
You said this is Hamas propaganda.
This man.
You are smearing, and that's something I will not tolerate.
Yeah, well, perhaps I tolerated listening to you. Perhaps you'd have the courtesy to allow me to
respond. Thank you for tolerating the
Now, on the 7th of October 2023, as we know, there was a slaughter and massacre of 1,200 in Israel, men, women and children, and 251 people were abducted. 2 days later, at a time when the Israelis still didn't know the numbers dead, at a time when they didn't know had all the Hamas terrorists been identified and either eliminated or frightened back into Gaza, Ofir was broadcasting that Israel is engaged in a genocide. This is a fraudulent narrative.
Okay, but can we set aside the man and go to the core point? I know that there will be people who will be listening to this, Alan, they will say, we share the horror and sympathy at October 7th. Mm. We share Israel's right to eradicate Hamas and to bring to justice those who did what they did. But the manner of persecuting that war that causes tens of thousands of people to die, that causes children to die, that causes civilians to die en masse, that effectively is a genocide. Can you see no truth in that?
I'd really enjoy the luxury of being able to finish what I'm saying, if you'd give me a moment, because this isn't a two-sentence soundbite. Israel has been fighting a war. The Hamas attack on Israel didn't conclude on the 7th of October 2023. For the following 20 months, missiles, thousands of missiles, were daily being fired at Israel. Israelis were taking to bomb shelters. People were dying. If Israel didn't have a effective defensive system, those missiles would have created enormous death and destruction. This was a war that Israel was fighting. And in Ireland, as in the narrative we've just heard, what's entirely ignored is that Hamas had labyrinthine tunnels, hundreds of miles of which exceed the mileage of the London Underground, in which not only were hostages hid, armaments now, were retained, Alan, rockets, and rockets were fired from adjacent to hospitals and residential buildings.
You asked for the grace to make your point.
Yeah, so it was inevitable in defending itself, tragically, that civilians in Gaza would die. And it's a terrible, tragedy. Yes, scale. Terrible tragedy. But what is never referenced when we talk about figures, and it's a dreadful, dreadful tragedy. Effectively, Hamas took the Palestinians in Gaza on the route of national suicide.
But will you go
it
to
was
the core?
Completely
no, but hang
insane.
On for a minute, Alan. I gave you a lot of scope, but that you've absolutely correctly asked for. Can you address the core point that I think I am putting, that so many people put when this comes up, which is that the onus was on Israel not to destroy a civilian population while persecuting military action. And they didn't deliver on that. They caused the deaths by the manner and the way in which they fought. Do you believe that to be acceptable?
I don't believe that's what happened. I believe the Israelis were fighting a war against a terrorist organization embedded within civilian locations, embedded in hospitals, in mosques, in residential homes, and that they've boasted of this. Hamas have boasted.
But is that not the same as the British saying we could have laid waste to Belfast, we could have decimated Derry, we could have wiped people off the face of Northern Ireland because they had an entrenched guerrilla campaign?
No, it's the same as the British fighting the Nazis in the Second World War and having no choice but to bomb major cities and to take out Nazi Germany. It's exactly the same. And the narrative that we've heard here about Israel in different circumstances could have been run in Ireland if social media then existed, about the British defending themselves and trying to win World War II. And the reality here is that no one ever criticises Hamas for tragically using the Palestinian civilian population as human shields.
Okay, let me bring in Dr. Ofer Kassif in response to that, because there were a number of things said about him. Yes, Ofer.
Yeah, I hope you give me the same scope. First of all, there's nothing. First of all, I said that we opposed the atrocities, the war crimes, the massacre committed by Hamas. This is one thing. I personally lost good friends there on 7 October. What the speaker said, I do not remember his name, I'm sorry.
Alan Shatter, former Justice Minister here.
Okay. What Alan said was a smear, because it's very easy to say that's a propaganda of Hamas. That's not propaganda of Hamas. Perhaps it might be too, but that doesn't make that untrue. And what I said, and I shall explain, what I said has nothing to do with propaganda of Hamas. It has everything to do with the truth. So first, the attack against Gaza, the genocide in Gaza, has nothing to do, and from the first day had nothing to do with the security of Israel and the Israelis. We are entitled to security. I live in Israel. We are entitled to security. As citizens, as individuals, and as a state, we recognize the right of Israel to exist as a sovereign state with security. Part of our ideas, the one Alan tried to mock, they are communists, they are extremists, whatever. Part of our idea and view and support for two-state solution and peace, part of it is the right of Israel also to exist in security. That will never happen without a Palestinian independent state alongside the state of Israel living in peace. That will never happen because, and I shall refer to it in a second from another angle. So this is one thing. Second thing, I began to say, sorry, that it had nothing to do with the security of Israel and the Israelis. It had everything to do with the realization of the genocidal plan, the so-called decisive plan, that Smotrich published already in 2017. If the Israeli government really wanted the security and well-being and lives of Israelis, it would have never sacrificed in vain so many hostages and soldiers, because they could be released more than 1 year ago. And time after time, just a second, please. Time after time, as including most of the families of the Israeli hostages said, it was the government of Israel who foiled the ability to reach an agreement to and to release them.
Okay, we have that point offered.
Let me finish in 20 minutes. I think I deserve it, like Ellen.
You've had a fair degree of scope offer, but okay.
Okay, so just a second. The one thing is that it's a sham to say that this genocide had anything to do with security and self-defense. It had everything to do with the realization of the genocidal decisive plan. Second, history didn't begin on October 7th. History begin with the Nakba, with the occupation. That doesn't justify one bit the massacre of October 7th, but let's be
Okay,
accurate.
We have that point now. Dr. Afer Kassif.
One sentence.
We have that point. Dr. Afer Kassif, member of the Knesset, thank you for your time this morning. Alan, I'm conscious there was a lot said there. Time is against us. Do you briefly want to reply?
I just hope that this is the last war we'll ever see between Israeli and Palestinians. I hope that we have a real peace. I hope it beds down. I wish everyone in Israel a better future. I wish for Palestinians a better future. But we have to stop falsifying history and engaging in unnecessary, useful rhetoric and symbolic gestures. The key thing, and I'll finish on this, the key thing about the Trump 20-point plan is that it sets out a roadmap and a strategy for a medium to long-term resolution of conflict and for peace. But that will require different leaderships on the Palestinian side and reform of their institutions and different leadership within the Israeli government.
Alan Shatter, thank you very much. Former Minister of Justice, board member of the Israel Council on Foreign Relations.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.